here, we start night at the Tzeisa Kochavim, so here there may be room also to involve that machlokas in terms of whether sphere is a mitzvah derais or mitzvah derabanan. If it's a derabanan, we can be more easily lenient to rely on shkia rather than waiting for Tzeisa Kochavim. But whatever it is, it starts at night. Whether we call that shkia or tzeis, but it starts at night. So is the mitzvah only at night, or does it just start at night? So that was a machlokas between Tosfos and the Bahag in those two places, in Menachos and in Megillah. And the view of Tosfos is that it can only be counted at night. That's when the mitzvah applies. And the Bahag was the Makel here, and the Bahag said, if you don't count at night, you can count during the daytime. That's also an acceptable slot. However, there's another machlokas where the Bahag is the Machmer. And this is this very famous position that causes us the challenge that it does, that the Bahag maintains that if we were to miss a day completely, not to count during the night or the day, so then we would not be able to continue with the mitzvah. And he ties this to the reference in the Pasuk to the word tamimos, sheva shabbosos tamimos. We have to have completion, apparently, in our account. And therefore, if we're missing anything, if we're missing any of the days, we're in trouble. So these two machlokas, can you count at night, or can you count only at night, or can you count during the day as well? And what happens if you miss a day? So how do we relate to them, lahalacha? So we all know from our earliest days in elementary school that tell us what to do, but to understand it is far more complex, to understand how we come to the conclusion. So our practice, as we know, is that we do count during the day, but without a bracha. And if we miss a day completely, so then also we are in no bracha zone. We continue counting without a bracha. But if we count it during the day, once, twice, however many times, so then we'll be able to resume the following nights counting with a bracha. So the question is, how did that happen? How do you get to a conclusion like that? So here, there is a major divergence of approaches. And it's fascinating to see how the approaches yield very different results. So we'll discuss, on the one hand, what we'll call the traditional Hesber for this issue. And then we'll mention that Rav Soloveitchik had a completely different understanding of this issue, which essentially has an effect on almost every shaila in Hilchos Sfiras HaOmer, that every issue becomes understood very differently, whether you take the traditional approach, as we'll call it, or you take the Soloveitchik's approach. So the traditional approach, I mentioned first, is as follows. First of all, what is the machlokas between the Bahag and the other Rishon? The shaila is, do you see Sfiras HaOmer as one big mitzvah, a mitzvah to count 49 days, or do you see it as 49 separate mitzvahs? Each night, there is a mitzvah to count that night. And the assumption being that if it's one big mitzvah, so then if there's a hole anywhere in the balloon, the whole thing is going to deflate. Then you're in trouble. So if you miss a night, you can't continue. That's what Tzimimus is coming to teach us, that it's all integrated into one package, and if you miss any nights, you don't have the mitzvah. While the other Rishonim, which is actually the majority of you in the Rishonim, even though we give great deference to the Bahag, as the Shechter often points out, that the Bahag was considered such a gadol among the Rishonim that every once in a while he has a shita which is maybe a minority view, but we give him deference in halacha because he gets that covered. So here, the Bahag's view would be then that it's all one big mitzvah, and the other Rishonim maintain, no, it's 49 separate mitzvahs. So if you miss Sechveis, the 17th night of Sfira, there's no reason why that should stop you from counting the 18th night, the 19th night, etc. So then, coming from that machlokas, so how does that translate practically? So then the question is, during the day, we're mesupik if there is a mitzvah to count or not, if we're able to fulfill the mitzvah to count during the day. So since we're not sure, Suffolk brachos lahakim. We should count, because why not? It might be a mitzvah, you might as well. And you should leave out the bracha because of Suffolk brachos lahakim. By the way, to say that you should count, why not? Even if we say that Sfira is a mitzvah derabanan, so you might say, okay, so then leave it out because Suffolk derabanan lahakim. But here it doesn't make sense to say like that, because first of all, you may actually be fulfilling the mitzvah in this zone, so you certainly would want to be machmer on that. And also, remember we discussed the Dalai Kosos before Yontif, the Ran's position, they don't say Suffolk brachos lahakel when it's a davar shalas bo tircha. So the hard part again is remembering, but when you remember to count sphere, it's certainly very quickly and easily done. So you wouldn't say Suffolk lahakel to leave the mitzvah out itself, but the bracha, fine, that you should leave out. Then the question of, if you missed a night completely, missed a day completely, missed the whole 24 hours, so then maybe you have the same type of approach, that it's a suffix, it's a machlokas rishonim, whether or not you keep counting. So therefore, again, same story, so count without a brach. So why is it that if you count during the daytime, so we let you count with a bracha after that? So that's often explained as a function of what we call a sfeik sfeika. Now here you have the confluence of two sfeikas. But yes, it's a safek if you can count during the day. And it's a safek if you can miss a day. So if the only way in which you missed the day was that you counted during the daytime, put the two sfeikas together, that's enough to keep going. Now, it's interesting to think about that for a second, because the whole notion of sveik sveika, usually that would mean that you have two sveikas together, and that's a kula. As you can put the two sveikas together, and you can be makel to not do something, for example, or to allow something that might otherwise be us. So here, just psychologically, we relate to the whole idea of making a bracha and sfira. If we say you can't make a bracha, so we feel like that's a chumra, because we're religious and we want to make brachas. So we feel like if we're left out of the bracha, we feel like you're being punished, and you feel like you're missing something, which is an appropriate hargasha. But technically, halachically, it's not exactly accurate. Like we say, suffik brachas lahakel really means that it's a kula to not do the mitzvah, it's a kula to not make a bracha. So that being said, this is an interesting application of sveik sveika. Normally, sveik sveika would be invoked as the kula to get you out of the fiat. So here we're saying with sveik sveika l'chayiv, that because the two sveikas together, so you're able to come back in and make a bracha. But the truth is, it's not so unusual if you think about it. One of the explanations of the mechanism of sveik sveika is that it's a numbers game. That if we assume, let's say, the average sveik is basically a 50-50 sveik, so then when the odds are 50-50, so we apply the rules that go along with sveikas, whatever they are in each individual case. But if you have the two sveikas together, so then your odds come to 75-25, assuming that they were both 50-50. Because you could say that on the one hand, it's a suffik if I could count if I miss a day. But on top of that, even in Timsi Lomar, you count up the possibilities, even if the rule is that I can't count if I miss a day. But then there's a 50% chance that counting during the day is not called missing a day. So it adds up that there's a 75% chance that you're able to keep counting, so the odds are in favor of that decision, so essentially it's not really a suffix anymore. The numbers are so lopsided, that's not really treated like a suffix. Now the truth is even more than that, right? It's really, it's close to 100% chance you can keep counting, because if you say that it's all behind you, so then the only reason I shouldn't be able to count is if I'm worried about the Baha'i. But the Baha'i said counting during the day counts. So if I'm just trying to follow the Baha'i, so then it's not really even 75%, it's really maybe 100%. So in any event, that's basically the traditional explanation. That's how you understand it, and the way the Prima Gadim and others have it, that essentially that's the issue. We have the Machlokas, whether it's one day or one mitzvah or 49 mitzvahs. And that's what the machlokas is about, whether if you miss a day, can you keep counting? And in terms of practice, we count without a bracha during the day because it's a machlokas. We count without a bracha if you miss a day because it's a machlokas. And if you have the two sveikas together, so then it's a sveik sveika, and we let you come back in with a bracha. Rav Soloveitchik understood the issue completely differently. And in Rav Soloveitchik's understanding, it's a radical redefining of all the lines here. But he's not the only one who said like this. There are a few other places you could find such a hesber, including Lubavitcher Rebbe. You should put this on the sign. But the event that Lubavitcher Rebbe had a similar mahalach, it was published in the Chiddush of Rabbi Yoram HaMashas, where he actually says something very radical there. Maybe we'll mention it in a minute. And in the Shilos and Tshuvas, Evan Yukara, you find such a mahalach as well. There are a few places where you find this approach. But essentially, it said as follows, that counting if you miss a day, the issue is not that it's one big mitzvah. The issue is something else. Really, everyone agrees that it's 49 separate mitzvahs. Parenthetically, you might have said, well, yeah, I could have told you it's 49 separate mitzvahs because we make 49 brachos, right? Isn't that a proof that it's 49 separate mitzvahs? So it's not a proof. It may be a little bit of a support, but it's not a proof because we don't necessarily have a rule that brachos are one-to-one ratio to mitzvahs. In addition to the fact that we have many mitzvahs that don't have brachos, but we also have mitzvahs that have more than one bracha. And sometimes they have two different brachos, or sometimes the bracha is recited on an action of a mitzvah. So if a mitzvah has a lot of actions, a lot of meisim, so then each one gets a bracha. So it's not inconceivable that there could be one mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, but it requires us to do 49 things. So each time we do it, you make a bracha. So that wouldn't have been a conclusive proof necessarily, but it's something. But in any event, that's how the Rebbe understood that 49 separate mitzvahs. So then the question is, okay, so if it's 49 separate mitzvahs, so then why can't I count if I miss a day? So explained to Soloveitchik and these other machabim as well, that the issue with counting if you miss a day has to do with the definition of counting. That one shouldn't think that counting means simply saying numbers. Counting is a definitive act. That it means actually keeping track of something and assigning numbers in order. So if you leave out numbers, so that's not called counting. That's just called saying numbers. If you say 1, 2, 4, 7, 9, 15, that's not counting. That's a football play. And so you have to actually have all the numbers in order for it to be called counting. Now, there is such a thing as counting by multiples, theoretically. You could count by fives or tens, but that's what's happening if you miss a random number in the middle. But there is a day in the Rishon, the Mishnah Berurah quotes, we don't hold like this, but there is a day that if you count only the first night, which is the Seder night, hopefully we're in the Chutz Laaretz, the Seder night, hopefully we're at least able to get that far. Some of us maybe not, but at least get to one day. So it was a day in the Rishon that sets a pattern that allows the days to be counted automatically after that. But in any event, this idea is that the whole point is to actually keep track of the days. And the normal counting systems, if you miss random numbers in the middle, then that's no longer called counting. So therefore, this hesber explains the salvation that the issue is not one of sveik sveika and something brachos lahakel, etc. So the idea of counting during the daytime. Why do we count without a bracha during the daytime? So not like the traditional hesber that it's because it's a suffix and it's a machlokes. Said the Rav, we count without a bracha during the daytime because it's not a mitzvah. Not a mitzvah, so there's no bracha. So then you'll say, well, wait a minute, so then why do I do it? So you do it because it accomplishes that the count should still be a count. That if you miss day five, but you say during the daytime, day five, so then when you pick up the next night from six will at least be a process of counting. And therefore you can make a bracha from that point on because you're still counting. So essentially there's some major differences here in the Rav's hesber from the traditional hesber. According to him, no one thinks it's one mitzvah. Everyone agrees it's 49 separate mitzvah. The reason you wouldn't be able to count is not because of a deficient package, it's because simply the definition of counting. And we're not building anything on Sveikus here or Safik Brachos Lahakim. It's simply that the idea of counting during the day is there to keep the count going rather than to fulfill a mitzvah. So one of the things he's introducing into the conversation is a whole Mechidish concept that we can distinguish in Sfiras HaOmer between the Kiyum mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, which might be limited within a certain narrow time frame, and the maintaining of the order of Sfira, which might have a much broader time frame and options in terms of how to do it. So that, as we'll see, has major ramifications, a complete redefining of exactly how this plays out. As we mentioned, if you look at Lubavitcher Rebbe's piece in the Chiddushim B'Yerem Al HaShas, he has a similar approach. He also says something very radical, which I've been told is actually kept halacha l'maisa in Chabad, that Sfira is an independent obligation. As the Torah says, Uspartim Lachad. We'll talk a little bit about what that means. And therefore, if one crosses the international dateline and finds himself on a different schedule than everybody around him, he would still maintain his own count. That's not yet the most radical part. But Shavuos doesn't have a date in the Torah. Shavuos comes as a consequence of Sfira ending. So he paskin that somebody who's counting his own Sfira would also observe his own Shavuos. It's quite a concept. But in any event, so let's look a little bit at how these different approaches affect things, because there are a number of major implications. So first of all, start off with one question, which seems like it's on the surface theoretical, it only has an afkamina l'shamayim. But if you say that if you count and you miss a day, that you can't count after, all the days afterwards are a problem, what about all the days beforehand? So let's say you miss day 9. So what about the first 8 days? Is that retroactively nothing? Were those retroactively brachos levatal? So you might say, well, what are you going to do about it? Right? So you'll do tshuva. Okay, but you know, whatever it was. What difference does it make? So we'll talk about in a second what difference it makes.
This is to the traditional opinion you're talking about?
So first the question is in the abstract. What's the story? You know, so let's say if we have a problem for the days after the missed day, so what does that say about the days before the missed day? So according to the traditional approach, taka should be the same thing. It's retroactive and not clear what you can do about it. But if there's a problem, you can't have one day without all of the days. So then the same way you can't keep counting, we're really saying that all the days until now were nothing. So what does that mean about bracha levatala? So you might say again, whatever, it doesn't matter, just do tshuva. But first the question has to be asked. So the Chidah and others said, yeah, chanami, have bracha l'matala mafreya. And others didn't think so. So why would you say it's not a bracha l'matala? So one way to say it is still within this explanation, but you could say there's no such thing as a bracha l'matala mafreya. This is famously attributed to a ritva, Masechas Chulin, where the ritva says that if somebody washes on bread. Right? So you don't wash on bread if you're only going to have a crumb. You have to have a minimum amount. So let's say you wash, and then you eat one crumb, and then somebody reminds you that you're on the Atkins diet, and you can't have any bread, or you don't like the bread, or it's Pesach, or whatever it is, you decide, you change your mind, you don't want to have any more after that first bite. So now you're not going to eat enough that would have justified the Amitila Sedayim. So is that a bracha l'batal? So he writes, no, that if when you made the bracha, that was the plan. So that's the chiyuv of the bracha. And retroactively, it doesn't get undone, it doesn't become an unnecessary bracha just because later on the plan changed. Or another example, the Shuvas Chaim Sofer talks about the fact that there is a concept of she'ela by Truma, by Kachin, by other things, that are dedicated by the power of verbal commitment to the nether. So we have a concept of she'ela, that you can have it undone. So you can declare something truma, and then you can negate the status. So says the Chasam Sofer, so then what happened to the bracha? It's bracha batala, so you made the bracha for no reason. So he says, no, once again, when you made the bracha, it was a mitzvah. If later on you came and negated that status, it doesn't make the bracha of batala mafreya, it was still a good bracha at the time. So that's one way to say that it's not a retroactive issue. But, according to the Salvation, the whole issue is completely different. Because according to him, it's not about it all has to be one package, and if you're missing any detail, it's nothing. According to him, the issue is that you can't build and keep counting when you're missing numbers from beforehand. But that only applies mikan l'hava. That only makes a problem for future days. But the days that you've counted until now, that all went all right. So the first 8 days in the scenario that the guy counted, that should all count. That should all be fine. And he did 8 days. He had every mitzvah separate, so he did 8 days all right. And the last 41, he doesn't have both. So that's a pretty major difference. Now again, does it really matter practically? So the answer is yes, it does matter. Because what would you say to somebody who knows that he is going to miss a day? How could you have such a scenario? Well, let's say, for example, let's say he's 117 years old, and for the previous 104 years, he never made it past day three. So you say that he just never remembers. So they say that he's got a pretty strong chazaka that he's not going to finish to the end. So maybe you should say that somebody who's never finished to the end, he has good enough reason to be suspicious. Maybe he shouldn't take on the risk. Or, as the post can discuss, let's say somebody has surgery planned, major surgery, and he knows he's going to be out of commission for more than 24 hours. So he's going to miss the day of sphere. He's going to be under that whole time. So maybe he should say also, so then he's going to be knocked out, in both senses of the word. So then maybe he shouldn't start. Maybe he shouldn't get involved with those earlier brachos, because that's a problem of bracha l'batala that you can foresee. Or this is relevant to the suggestion of the Mishnah Berurah, which others disagreed with. But the Mishnah Berurah quotes an earlier sefer, which is a discussion. This is what the sefer meant. It's itself a whole story. I could talk about this topic separately because it's got a lot of interesting applications to it. But the question is, should women get involved in counting Sfiras HaOmer with the bracha? That if we assume that Sfiras HaOmer is a mitzvah sasesha as monogramma, which it seems to be, even though there's a Ramban and Kiddushin that says not that way, it's a separate topic, but if we assume that women are pater from Sfiras HaOmer, so then, okay, so you're pater, but women can still voluntarily perform mitzvah sasesha as monogramma, and the Ashkenazi Rishon and Paskin, they can make a bracha on it too. So what about sphere? That should be in that category. We should say that if they want to, let them voluntarily count sphere and make a bracha. But the Mishnah Berurah recommends against it, apparently concerned that since there's a risk that you might miss a day, and if you do that, then all the brachos you made until then are going to be retroactively nullified. So then why get involved with a possible multiple bracha l'batala if you're not mechuyev? If you're not obligated, so then why should you take on this possible risk? Better to count without a bracha. So according to Rav Soloveitchik, you wouldn't have this concern. Because even if you end up missing a day along the line, so that will affect the days afterwards. But everything you did till then will be fine. You won't have an issue of a bracha l'batala l'mafreya. So that's one example where you see a pretty radical difference. The Rav's opinion could also explain a view of the Gaon that says as follows, that even though you can't miss a full day, but there is a shita that, let's say it's, you missed day 8 and now it's day 9, or it's nighttime, about to count day 9, and you realize you missed day 8. But you can say, yesterday was 8, and then make a bracha and count day 9. So why should that work? It's already after the Zman for day 8. So again, as we saw, the Rebbe was essentially introducing this notion that there is a distinction between the mitzvah of Sfira and keeping the count going. So even though you missed the mitzvah of the 8th day, but it's still approximate to the 9th day. So if you mark it from the other side, you say yesterday was the 8th, so then there's still a hemshah for you to continue and then pick up the mitzvah from there. Hi.
The idea is keeping that continuity, even if you missed a couple of days, but it's all in succession, meaning that you missed day 6, 7, 8, day 9, you could say 3 days ago 6, then 7, 8, and then bracha 9.
Right, so presumably not. We're also not making all this view anyway, this, this view for one day. But presumably you can't mark a day without at least having some shaykhus to it, if you're adjacent to it. So then you could say, okay, that was day 8, now this is day 9. But if you're already a couple days separated from it, presumably this position would maintain that that's too much. But it's interesting how there's another issue on the other side of the equation, which also, the very baffling psak of the Shulchan Aruch, quotes from the Machzeh Vitri, a very difficult ruling. And it's interesting that you can explain this difficult ruling, so it's less baffling. But there are two completely different ways to understand it, depending on whether you want to take the traditional explanation or the Rav's explanation. Shulchan Aruch paskens as follows. All right, let's say, so we mentioned before that it's a question whether it's Seis or Shvi'ah, that's the time starts. And there is also a view that it could start Klak HaMincha. It's much more of a minority view. So, very often, throughout the period of Sfira, so people have the following suffix. It's a very common issue. That you're davening in a shul where either Ma'ariv is taking place after Shkia, before it says, or maybe even, especially on a Friday night, but it could happen during the week also, maybe you're davening after Plag. So your trade-off is like this, that on the one hand, you want to be on Machmir, and you want to wait to count Sfira when it's fully the Zman L'Choladei. So you'd rather wait until later at night to count. On the other hand, you know that it's very likely that you'll forget. But when you're in shul, they're counting in shul, so that's going to remind you. But if you don't count in shul, it's going to be likely you're going to forget. So when they count Shkir and Shul, let's say after Shkir, or certainly after Plag, so what do? You say, okay, so let me take this minority view that I can be Yotze then, because at least I'll remember. Or do you say, no, I'll risk waiting until when I'm sure it's the right Zman, and then I may end up in a position where I'm knocked out of the game completely. So the Shulchan Aruch has an Eitzah, very hard to understand Eitzah on the surface. That says you should count in shul when they announce it. Count without a bracha. And then later on, if you remember, you can count with a bracha. That's very difficult to understand on the surface. Because we know that we have a practice, it's also discussed in the Shulchan Aruch, that if somebody asks you on a random night what night of Sfira it is and you haven't yet counted, that you should be careful not to answer the question directly and say, tonight is the 8th night, because that may itself constitute a kiyum in counting Sfira, and then you will no longer be able to make a bracha that night. You can resume the next night, but you won't be able to make a bracha that night because you've already done the mitzvah. So that's why we have the practice of saying, last night was whatever. So, if that's the way we're so careful in saying that, so here the Shulchan Aruch is giving this advice, which seems to tell you to on purpose say it as a possible counting, and yet we're still going to let you count later with a bracha. So, baffling suggestion. Yosef?
Where does it come from that if I don't have intent in any way for what I say to be considered valid for something, and suddenly we can just hop it, yeah, then you can guilty?
So that's a fair question. It's not so clear that will be enough. It's based on a couple of chumras and a couple of kulas really put together, because the whole shaila of whether mitzvah srichas kavana in general, whether mitzvah srichas kavana by what seems to be a drabbanan, whether maybe this mitzvah itself has a different approach to kavana, you can make a lot of arguments.
It's not even a bracha though, right?
Right, the bracha for sure is not mahaki. Although there were those who understand that the bracha might be relevant as a statement of lack of intent. But strictly speaking, the bracha as a chiyuv, the bracha is not ma'akir. And so for sure, that's why we have this eight in general, according to the traditional explanation of counting during the day and counting if you miss a day, because we assume the bracha is not ma'akir. So for sure, you could be yotze without counting, without making the bracha that. That part doesn't bother us, but the kavana is a little bit more interesting. And there are those who maintain that even though the bracha would not by itself be ma'akir, but if you're not making a bracha without any other explanation, that might be an indication that you're not mechaving to fulfill the mitzvah. So that's itself a worthwhile question. It seems to be really a chumra to be worried about this. But in any event, that eitzah certainly seems to be very much at odds with what we're being told here, that all you have to plug, count without a bracha, and then do that on purpose, and then we'll let you count with a bracha. And the question seems to be, mimarashach, that if you're yotzei then, so why are you able to count later with a bracha? Why don't you make a bracha then? And if you're not yotze then, so then what's the point? What are you accomplishing? So again, there are two completely different ways to understand this. The traditional explanation will say as follows, that this is an example of a somewhat controversial concept that the Shulchan Aruch seems to accept, but others don't necessarily accept. It's the truth about this in the Ohr Yadav. That this is an example of the concept of Tanayim mitzvah. That one can do a mitzvah conditionally, which is tied into the whole question of mitzvah srichas kavana, because once you assume that one performs the mitzvah not only through the action, but also through the intent to do the mitzvah, and therefore if you assume you can turn it on as a couple of building blocks of assumption, that if you need kavana, and you could also turn the kavana on and off, you could have negative kavana to not fulfill the mitzvah. So then you take that assumption another step and say you can have conditional kavana. You can say that if this happens, I want this to be a mitzvah, and if not, not. Right? This is a topic that's relevant a little bit for Pesach, Seder night, Yafi Komen. So it's a whole different discussion. We'll mention it now because it's take us far afield, but it's an interesting question. So the issue of Tanayim b'mitzvos could be relevant here, that maybe what the Shulchan Aruch is saying is as follows. That after plag or after shkia, whatever it is, should do as follows. Count sfira with a tanayim. And say that if I remember to count later, I don't want this to count for anything. This is not a mitzvah. But if later on I happen to forget, so then, retroactively, we'll know that this was a mitzvah. That'll be the condition, that I have negative kavanah for it to be not a mitzvah if I end up counting later. But if I don't, then it should be. And then I'll at least have the minority view to rely on that I did count sphere at some time and I should be able to continue counting. So it's a way of kind of hedging your bets that ideally I'll preserve my ability to do it in the perfect time later. But just in case that doesn't happen, then at least I'll have this fallback plan that I counted at least in a possibly acceptable time, and that'll be enough to rely on to keep counting afterwards. That's how the traditional explanation would address it. According to Soloveitchik, you say it completely differently. You could say, Nachanami, you're not Yotze then. So when you count at Plag, you don't make a bracha, because it's not a mitzvah. It's the same thing as counting during the day, which would be the previous day at that point. And then you count without a bracha, because it's not a mitzvah. So what does it accomplish? It accomplishes that you preserve the Seder, that you can keep on counting after that. So it's another example of this distinction that we've been saying between the mitzvah sphere and the maintaining of the order of sphere. That maybe there's only a limited time to fulfill the mitzvah, but the order can be maintained. What have we seen now? We've seen that it can be maintained during the next day. That's the whole idea of counting during the daytime. We've seen the shita that it can be contained, can be maintained even into the next night already. You could say yesterday was 8, today is 9. And now we're coming at it from the other direction, that counting can be maintained a little bit in advance. You can assign the number adjacently from the other side and say this is the flip version of that other sheet we mentioned before this. That just like you can be adjacent after the day has passed, you can be adjacent in advance and say that is day 8 and mark it. And even if that's not the mitzvah, it still will accomplish maintaining the Seder. So then this explanation, the Rav's version of what you're accomplishing here is completely different. It's not that you want to fall back on a minority view in case you end up with nothing. It's that at least you will have marked the day. But the mitzvah won't necessarily happen, but you won't have the issue of being excluded from the count after that. Okay, so far so good? So this is relevant also to a couple of other shilas. There is a famous issue that is relevant to 1/7 of the Jewish population, at least once in their only once in their lives. And despite its relevance, it was really made famous by the Mechas Chinuch. Mechas Chinuch brought this issue to everyone's attention. Question is, what happens to a bar or bas mitzvah? Let's assume we'll count the bas mitzvah as well if she chooses to voluntarily count Sfira. So what happens to a bar mitzvah boy who becomes Sfira, who becomes bar mitzvah in the middle of Sfira Salmer, which statistically, presumably, about 1/7 of the population has a birthday during that period of time. So when it's your 13th birthday, so you only become a gadol in the middle of the sphere. So if we assume that you're only chayiv and mitzvos at the age of gadlus, so then essentially the bar mitzvah boy who turns bar mitzvah on day 8, so the first 7 days he didn't do, regardless of what he actually did do. If he wasn't chayiv and mitzvos, so then he was not in fulfillment. If you say the whole mitzvah is one big package, you can't miss any parts of it, so then how's that going to work? So then you have missed a part of it because you weren't chayiv in the earlier days. And it's a question that's relevant also to a gerush and niskayer. If a person converts to Judaism in the middle of Sfira Salmer and only becomes chayiv in mitzvos in the middle, so presumably we'll have the same shiloh. Can you come into Sfira in the middle if we wouldn't let an adult just miss the first 6 days and then start counting Sfira? So would we say the same thing? And if not, why not? To a bar mitzvah boy or a ger who essentially missed those first days because he wasn't chayiv mitzvah.
Well, if he was counting prior to actually becoming a bar mitzvah, then perhaps the kiyum factor maybe that does, it might, I presume, exist, is enough to make that transfer easy, and one that we can say it's not like he's missed the previous days, meaning that kiyum is enough to sustain. He did the max that he could at his stage, so when he becomes bar mitzvah now, if he continues that but on a new level.
Alright, it's an interesting way to phrase it. So essentially, this is a little similar to what you're saying. Basically, there are many, many approaches to this issue. It's quite elaborate about this, but we only have a few more minutes to just mention it broadly. There are basically 3 conclusions one could have on this issue. Each conclusion has many different voices within it, and some saying differently to get to the same conclusion. But the 3 approaches you could take, on the one hand, you have, we'll call them, for lack of a more accurate term, we'll call them machmirim. That there are those who will say that, yeah, taka, you can't start that yet. Bar mitzvah boy is going to be knocked out, and the ger will be knocked out, they'll have to start next year. The chidah took this position, yeah, the neder took this position, and yeah, essentially, you can't start in the middle, you can't be missing a part of it. So that's a problem for the bar mitzvah boy and the ger. It's going to be a little funny because let's say the bar mitzvah boy, so he's allowed to count with a bracha until he's bar mitzvah, mishum chinuch. And then he'll become bar mitzvah and he'll no longer be able to count with a bracha. It's a very odd paradox, but because he became chayiv mitzvah, so he can no longer make a bracha. It's a very unusual kind of situation, but that's what that conclusion would seem to yield. On the other hand, on the other extreme, so you have what we'll call the Mekilin. There are those who say, and this is also quite Mechudish, there are those who say that it's okay, you can start at that point, because the Chiyuv Tmimus means whatever you were Chayiv in. So somebody who's Chayiv in 49 days has to count 49 days. But if somebody only enters into the Chiyuv in the middle, so then he's only Chayiv from day 14 to day 49, that's called Tmimus for him. It's an interesting type of conclusion. But in the middle, so then you have a number of Achronim who maintain that the issue hinges on whether the Bar Mitzvah boy, let's focus on him for a second, might be different than a girl, let's talk about it separately, whether the Bar Mitzvah boy was counting as a child. And if he was counting as a child, so then when he becomes Bar Mitzvah, we let him continue with the bracha. But if not, then he'll have to wait till next year. So why should that be if it's not a mitzvah? So how does that work? So Yosef was suggesting that maybe it's enough of a mitzvah. Maybe it's something that it rises to whatever threshold that's necessary. And there are Achronim who say like that. So the Mechassinah himself takes this position. And he discusses a couple of different ways to come to that conclusion. He talks about the issue that, I think we mentioned this year, the Sefer Kavod DeKashesa, who focuses on questions he considered to be unanswerable. The author of the Chalkes Yoav has a list of questions that he felt was impossible to answer. So the first question in that list says, there's a din in the Gemara that if somebody converts to Judaism and he had children before he converted, he's Yotzei already Peruru. That even though he fulfilled this mitzvah when he was not Jewish, but that's enough that he is Yotzei when he becomes Jewish. And the Chalkes Yoav said, I can't understand how it could possibly be. And he considered this to be the first of his list of unanswerable questions. So the Menchassinach discusses this and says, maybe that's a raya, that's something that you do towards a mitzvah, even before the Zman, could have a status that's relevant towards after the Zman HaChiyuv. He also points out, the Reb Chaim, the Stencils, the whole discussion about this, that Reb Chaim has an essay in the Stencils where he brings a number of proofs that the Maisa of a Katan, if a Katan does an Avera, it's called a Maisa Avera. That even though he's not prohibited from doing Averos, but it doesn't mean that his actions are meaningless, and an action that's an Avera is still considered to be an Avera. And therefore, maybe also a mitzvah is considered to be a mitzvah, even though he's not chayiv in mitzvahs, but his actions still attain that status. And therefore, this mitzvah, at least from the perspective of the chefza, so to speak, is considered to be fulfilled. The various versions of this approach, but according to Soloveitchik's approach, you don't have to say any of this. Right? You could say that let him count as a kohen, and it won't be a mitzvah. Fine. But it doesn't matter, because that will maintain the hemshech, that will maintain the continuity. And then, once he becomes bar mitzvah, he'll be chayiv in mitzvahs, and he'll be able to build on that structure. So once again, it's yet another example of his innovative concept here, that there is a chiluk between the mitzvah sphera and the count being maintained. So according to the traditional explanation, it's all one mitzvah, we have a problem dealing with the kohen who's not chayiv in mitzvahs. And we have to say something in the middle. But according, if you want it to work, or it could be nachmer that it doesn't work. But according to the Rav, you don't need a kiyum mitzvah. You only need a minyan. You need a structure, and therefore a katan can maintain that structure. When he says, if he's been counting the kadnuso, when he comes in on day 8 and says, today is the 8th day, that has meaning because he has counted the first 7 days.
Would you say, according to your Soloveitchik's approach, it's more problematic than if Mishum, you know, let's say he wasn't doing it at all, and then his bar mitzvah came midway and he started counting, so then there would be no counting based on it?
Yeah, no, for sure. His opinion is this middle view. Right? So there are basically three approaches on how to address this question. So the Machmirim said the Bar Mitzvah boy can't start no matter what. Mechilim said he can start even if that was the first day he ever counted. And this middle view is that it depends if he was counting or not. But if he was counting as a child, So then you can resume counting. So how do you explain that position? So the Mechassinach and others assume there's some kind of mitzvah there, or some type of proof that you can have a mitzvah even without a chiyuv. But according to the Rav, you don't have to say that. You don't need a mitzvah. You just need a structure. And the same way counting during the day provides structure without the mitzvah, so too a katan has the same benefit.
I think it was according to the Minchasmina who brought the raya from the case of someone who becomes a Jew while he has kids. So does that translate it to? Just as an aside, is that for sure that he's Yosef Peru in such a case?
The Gemara says that, and it's a palo from a couple of reasons, because first of all, he wasn't chayav in mitzvahs, and secondly, he was also not even related at that point. It's he caught an adol dummy. So even if they convert, also they're not related. So it's the whole thing is hard to understand.
Right.
That's why the Chalkas Yod has such a problem with it. So I think we've mentioned in the past, if you're interested in pursuing the Chalkas Yod's questions, I talked about, I think certainly in the last master we spoke about it, that he has 103 questions he considers to be the hardest questions that nobody knows the answer to. So of course, once you say something like that, so you're tempting the whole world to jump in and tell you their answers. So many did. Nachum Gishtetner has the same friend called the Luga de Terutza, where he answers up 37 of them, right? The Skamachi of Luga. More than that. Anyway, they answer up however many questions are the Skamachi of Luga. There's a sefer called Shari Ziv, where he has in the back a Kavod de Nichusa, 103, all the 103 he answers up. And Rabbi David Mandelbaum, who's an unbelievably prolific author, so he came out with this huge three-volume set where he gathered all the answers that anybody ever wrote to these questions, and he solicited some himself by writing letters to contemporary Gedolim saying, come with whatever answers you have to the Kavod HaKasheses. So you can get that safer. It's available in stores, and you could spend a lot of time reading all the answers to this question. So, but in any event, so the question of whether it's relevant to Sphira, that's part of the issue. So, just to mention one more point, because we're almost out of time, there's at least one other interesting shiloh, which is a little bit longer explaining. We'll just mention this at the beginning of tomorrow, but just to mention now, so the Nodeb Yehuda has a suffix that what happens if somebody, Rachman al-Islam, is in Aninus. Let's say somebody loses a relative, and the funeral is more than 24 hours later. So, an owning during that time is pater from mitzvos. And we assume that it's not just pater, but it's really wrong. He shouldn't be involved in mitzvot during that time. So the shaila comes up. It's going to be more than a 24-hour period in the middle of sphira. So are we saying that this onen has to sacrifice the sphira? He has to say, all right, so I'm going to have to knock myself out of the game for the whole rest of the sphira because I'm going to miss these 24 hours? So this is an issue that Rabbi Yehuda discusses in his Tshuvas. And according to the Rav, so he has an easy eitzim. Let him count during the day. If he counts during the day, it won't be a kiyum mitzvah. It will not interfere with the principle of aninus. But he'll be able to continue counting after that because he'll have maintained the count, and that will provide enough of a structure to be able to go from that point on. Okay, so we're just about out of time. There's one or two other interesting shayos I'd like to mention. Again, our plan for tomorrow is to start the Drabamans official for the next few days, and we'll do that. But I'll just maybe mention the first few minutes. There's one or two other interesting points, and we'll take it from there.